AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Hello Somebody, a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia, where we rage against the machine, where we raise our voices against injustice and stand up for justice, where we embrace hope and joy with an optimism for a brighter, more just future. Each week, I'll be dropping knowledge, whether it's a solo episode from me or a hearty discussion with esteemed guests doing great things in spaces and places of politics, entertainment, social justice, and beyond. We get real, baby. I mean, really real. We get honest. We get up close and personal for you. Yes, you. Because everybody is somebody. Before we begin, I want to give a special shout out to my team. Thank you, Sim, Tiffany, Sam, and the team over at Good Juju Studios, Erica England, Pepper Chambers, the hot one, and my social media team. Well, y'all, as promised, I have the one and only Bria Baker back with us as an activist, writer, freedom fighter, and self-care advocate. Bria can definitely add light and love to any conversation, and we are about to jump right into it. Y'all remember that song, Jump, Jump, Jump to It? I won't even try to sing because y'all won't love me like you do if I sing. Welcome back to the show. Thank you for being back with us on Hello Somebody, Bria. We are so happy to have you. And with everything that's happening in our lives, I know that you are a solid, excited advocate for self-care. So let's go ahead. Let's jump into it. Let's talk about it.
Thank you so much for having me back. And this is the best conversation to be having right now because there's a lot going on in the world and we really do have to take care of ourselves.
So yeah, we do.
Thank you for having this combo.
No, I'm glad. It's very timely. And I know you will drop some nuggets that I need as well. So this is selfish. Then let me just put that out there. This show is selfish. Self-care. You got to be a little selfish. Yes, we are. Just people get to listen in on it. So I want to center our conversation with Audre Lorde. You know, she's a feminist and a civil rights leader. And one of her quotes reads as follows: self-care is not self-indulgence. It is self-preservation. Mm-hmm. Where does that take you, Bria? Mm-hmm.
I love that so much because, yes, when we say self-care, I think people hear the self and think it is selfish, which honestly is not a bad thing to be selfish. I think there are moments when it just, our life requires that from us to go inward and focus on ourselves. But what I loved is the idea of, in preserving myself, I'm doing more service for the work that I'm here to do, because it is a disservice for me to, you know, for an Audre Lorde to only write and theorize for a couple years because she wasn't able to take care of herself, versus decades plus and the dozens of works we've been able to get from her because she was able to really prioritize herself. And I think we, again, to the burnout, you know, sometimes people burn out so fast and you lose out on all that they could have been and could have contributed to the space. So it is selfish in some ways, but it's also in service of the community too.
really is. And sometimes I like to think of it as when your car, hopefully we will not be on fossil fuels, but for now we're still filling up our car with gas. And the gas is pretty high as of this conversation. So y'all forgive me for even using this analogy, but it is like filling up your tank. You know, the car can only take you so far before you have to refill. And if we do that for our vehicles, and not just the gas, the maintenance to your vehicle, if you own one, I know we probably have some folks that ride public transit. Shout out to you. If you, I'm just using this as an example, but if you do the car example, whether you own one or not, it's just the example. You got to refuel. You got to change your oil. You got to get it tuned up every now and then. You know, you got to maintain the car so that the car is running optimally. And so, Bria, is that a good?
Oh, I love this analogy. And I, to take it even deeper, the longer you wait to maintain your car, the more expensive it becomes to maintain it.
Come on.
The more gas you are guzzling when you get to that final stretch versus they always tell you, you know, fill your gas tank back up before it gets to like a quarter of a tank.
That's right.
You know, take it to be maintained before it's on its last leg, because by that point, now you got to fix everything and it's rusting fast. It's like, so it's the self-preservation piece is don't wait until you're already depleted to then fill your gas tank back up. It's like preserve yourself along the way, preserve your energy along the way, take care of yourself along the way so that you never get to that burnt out period.
Yeah. I can visualize it. And you're right. It is much more expensive. And if we think about the wear and tear that we put on our physical bodies and also our minds and our spirit, if we don't replenish, then that wear and tear could manifest itself with some health challenges.
Oh, yes, definitely. 1,000,000%. I mean, you know, I'm not going to drag out the car analogy too much deeper. But on that note, too, it's like if you're not taking care of yourself, if you're not taking care of the vehicle, it will shut down on you at the worst possible time. You on the highway, like, please let me just get to insert gas station so that I can. And it's like, nope, sorry, shut down here. Cause I told you back there that you was on E and you waited until the last possible moment. And our bodies do the same exact thing.
Yeah.
It will shut us down in a heartbeat and say, no, I told you to rest. And now you're asking me, well, I just have this one thing that I want to do. Please just let me get to that finish line. And then it hurts you even more because you weren't willing to just make the pauses when you were there. So it's so real. And it's disappointing to see it in people because then it's harder to come back from once you have those health complications. And we see Black women, Black men in general.
Yes.
Dying in their 40s and 50s. And I'm sure they were thinking, you know, once I achieve this accolade, once I get to this place in my career, then I'll take a second to rest. And then you don't always get there because the lack of self-preservation along the way was stopping you from that. And I think that is so heartbreaking to see. And so even just like our beloved Bell Hooks passing away so young.
Yes.
And it's just heartbreaking to know that like we could have had more time with her. Her loved ones could have had more time with her. And what are those stressors that lead to Black people feeling like they can't take a break? You know, we're so busy telling ourselves you got to work twice as hard to get half as far, to be half as good, whatever the case may be. But then it's like, I would rather you be a little bit more mediocre or take some more breaks and live a long life. I want to see more of us in rocking chairs in our old age, not giving everything of ourselves to these spaces that at the end of the day are going to eulogize us. Like, we don't get nothing more than that.
That is so powerful, what you just said. More of us in rocking chairs, meaning that we will live to that point. And especially Black men, I mean, we're dipping back and forth. Self-care is for everybody. But Bria, I want to go back to a point. We know that Black men die earlier than any other group here in the United States. And part of that is what you're laying out, the whole notion of some of it is toxic masculinity. And I don't mean that because, you know, the alpha male, like, what you mean?
Right.
Strength expresses itself in a multitude of ways, but we just haven't been socialized in this culture that strength can manifest itself in different ways. And so we often think of just brute strength instead of strength of mind and body and spirit and strength of heart. All of those things make somebody strong. But Rhea, do you think that a lot of the ways that we have been socialized in this country, especially Black people, doesn't lend itself to us really understanding that we deserve self-care?
Oof, deservingness is such a big piece of it. I think a lot of times we have like, you know, there's such an interesting relationship between Black people and labor in this country. And obviously, speak we know it. During slavery,
speak on it.
It was a forced relationship. But in many ways, I feel us forcing that again is this like, it has to be hustle culture. We have to be grinding all the time. We've got to be doing something. We got to be productive in service of who or what. Like most of the time, it's in service of somebody else's vision. And most of the time, that somebody else is a very powerful, very wealthy white person who is not working as hard as the, you know, the people at the bottom of their totem pole. I just feel that in our DNA that we feel like we have to work and prove that we're not lazy, prove that we are valuable to this country. And it's like our ancestors did all that for us.
I
like
know that's right. Debt paid.
We literally built it. This country would not be. And I think sometimes people hear us say that and they're like, oh, that seems dramatic. But like, this country would not be a global power.
That's right.
Would not have had as much economic, military power if it did not have our free labor. So for us to then continue to give of ourselves so freely feels like we don't really know the shoulders that we stand on. And so I definitely feel that. I feel this pull of Black people feeling like they have to prove who we are and our value to people that are never going to really see that. And so I definitely want us to like release ourselves from the self-inflicted shackles of needing to be productive all the time and take more breaks. But especially when it comes to our men, I feel like there is a, you know, toxic masculinity, it goes many ways. So it's not just a man is being toxically masculine towards someone else, but it's how we raise our boys too. And I think our boys are growing up to be men who feel like they have to be providers every second of every day. And that they are not valuable to someone if they do not have, you know, certain success markers hit. And it's frustrating to see when I'm just like, I wish you felt like you could take a break. But when you take a moment to be still, then you got to ask yourself, who am I really? What is my worth? What is my value when it's not connected to providing for somebody? And I think that's a difficult pill for some people to swallow. And it's easier to just be working all the time. And so that is so frustrating for me to see, because I know that it's such a deeper conversation that we're not having, but the Band-Aid fix is I'm gonna just work. I tell myself I'm work till I get my first million. Then you hit that or whatever, you know, whatever that marker is. And there's always the goalpost is always being moved. It's never enough.
Yeah, that is so true. I don't think Black people, the way that we've been socialized, the way that this society has been socialized to see us very much as the workhorses of mm-hmm. society. Mm-hmm. And I love your point about if you settle, you got to then study your why. It makes you have to go and do some introspection, which can be very difficult to do. Like to rest with yourself is challenging for many of us. Having stillness yeah. is challenging. You know, we have this mindfulness movement now, which I believe mm-hmm. there's a something to mindfulness, and it is really getting in tune. So whether it's mindfulness and meditation, all of those things, though, do require you to be still and to center yourself. Some of us are mm-hmm. not really comfortable with ourselves, Bria. Do you have any techniques or advice about how to help someone start to become comfortable with themselves?
Now we're getting into the real stuff, because yes, a lot of people are like afraid of the conversations and the thoughts they have when there's no other noise. And so they drown that out with insert vice, whether that is numbing it with drugs yes. or whatever the case may be. Success can be that too, though. It's the idea that if I'm always working, I never have a second to really think of who I am. Honestly, I'm still on that journey myself, but therapy has been a big piece of it. And I want more Black people going to therapy and really answering those questions of like, who am I when no one is watching? And do I like that person? And who do I want to be when no one is watching? And what does it take to get there? I think therapy is a really big part of it, because if you're not ready to really be still with yourself, there's an accountability partner who is there to support you in it.
Yeah.
And so I think that is so, so important, is like having an accountability partner who can ask you the hard questions. And even if you can't answer it in the session, you walk away from it like, I can't believe she just rocked my world like that. Like, why would she ask me that in that session? And you're thinking about that over the course. I think that's a big one for sure. I also think just like the little things, taking yourself on dates. I go out to eat by myself all the time.
Do you? I am more of an introvert than people think I am because they see me on stages and they see me speaking. I'm really shy, Bria. And don't y'all laugh really? Out there who know.
I'm like, what? Shy.
I am. I am shy. You know, it's easier to speak to lots of people in an audience going back to that being with oneself. It's harder to be when you're one-on-one. That is an intimate experience.
That's true.
So I'm better with like speaking to bigger crowds. I don't think I give anybody that impression, though, but I am a shy person. So you can take yourself out to, I have had to eat by myself, but I don't necessarily like to eat by myself. Even if I'm not necessarily engaging in conversation, deep conversation with the person, just knowing somebody else is at the table with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's real though. I mean, I think different people will have their own thing, but for me, I love it because it gives me, again, like a break from it. And I do see myself as someone who's very extroverted, but I still need to recharge. And it's nice to be able to do that and not feel like the pressure to continue a conversation or constantly be talking to someone. And I'll go to a restaurant and just bring a book. And it's like I'm reading, but then I'll pause from reading to just be like, you know, eating and thinking to myself. And I enjoy the questions that come up for me during it. I also think some of my best ideas come from stillness. And I think other people have admitted to that. You know, people will say my best ideas come in the shower.
Yes.
Or when I'm using the bathroom or when I'm on a walk. And I'm always like, well, if you opened yourself up to more still time, what is possible? What would you unlock in yourself if you just had a moment to be silent? You know, for me, religion is also a big part of it. It's like, if I'm still, God can speak to me.
Yes.
But even if you're not someone who's religious, just seeing how you speak to yourself when no one is around and no one is listening can open up so many ideas of like, wait, this is what I really want to be doing when I'm not thinking about what makes my daddy proud, my mom proud, what my community wants of me. Like, what do I enjoy? You can't really answer those things. And I think that's why a lot of people get to these midlife crises where they're like, I've been living for so many other people. Because I've never taken the time to get to know myself and know what I want out of this life or what I want out of a legacy. So I think that's a big part of self-preservation is just like being still enough to hear your own inner voice and your gut instincts.
We will have to take it because this culture doesn't necessarily provide for us collectively to feel like we can center ourselves in a way that edifies. Now there is the Eurocentric worldview and the Afrocentric worldview, and those worldviews are in conflict. And I'm using these as two examples where the Eurocentric view is more individualistic, and not individualistic in let me center myself and find out who I am. It's more individualistic in how much money can I make? What can I do? What, how many cars can I buy? How many clothes? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the Afrocentric worldview is more collective oriented. Mm-hmm. And you find cultures where there are people of color, be they African, indigenous, Asian, those cultures tend to be more collective centric.
Mm-hmm.
But the Eurocentric view certainly permeates the entire world.
Definitely. Oh my God. I mean, I have two funny examples about this. One is I was living in Singapore for a year, actually. That was my first job out of college. It was beautiful. Oh my gosh. Like one of the most beautiful countries I've been to. Loved the experience, but it opened my mind to how many things I had normalized based on what life in the US is like. And so in Singapore, it is very common for grown adults to still be living with their parents into their 30s. And to me, I feel like in our society, we see that as a negative marker of like, you're not doing right. You're not doing well. But there it was just like, why would you waste money paying rent to somebody
that right
else?
There, that point.
When you have family here that you could be saving, building, have community. Same with like elders in that community. It was just like the idea of putting your grandparents in a nursing home where they are not with family was just like, why? If they have living family, why are they living with other people? And that really opened my mind up to both collective communal like spaces and thoughts, but also just all of the ways that we keep ourselves from getting care from others. Because sometimes you need community care, not self-care.
That's right.
And it's hard to do that when you feel isolated. You're somewhere in an apartment by yourself, afraid to reach out. And that's very different from being surrounded by family or friends or people who are constantly checking in on you. And that is just the culture is like, that's what we do. We check in on one another. Same with like Black culture, African cultures, like the idea of a village raising a child.
Yeah.
Now it's like parents are doing everything by themselves with no real care. And we could have a whole conversation about how much we throw mothers to the wolves right after they bring a child into this world. And I just think that that was a moment where I was just like, why do we see it as like a negative if you decide to be a part of a community that is willing to care for you and you're caring for them too? It goes both ways. So that's one. But also CP time is, I think, another example of this because, you know, we joke about that. Oh, you know,
color people's time.
Yes.
Just for those who may be.
Those who don't know.
Yes.
Color people's time. But, you know, when you go to Black nations or even, you know, they'll say island time when you're in the Caribbean or whatever. And they'll remind you, it's just like, why are you rushing everywhere? Like, sit down, just pause for a second. And I was studying abroad somewhere and, you know, you go out to lunch and people are at lunch for 2 and 3 hours. In the U.S., it's like, okay, I'm going to fit you in for 45 minutes. And that's like the best I can give you. And it's like, but we're just getting into our conversation by then. Like, why are you rushing everywhere? And it's something that as a New Yorker, I'm just like, you know, I want to be moving fast and I feel like anxious when I'm not feeling like I'm efficient. But it's also like it's a trade-off, you know? So yes, I'm more efficient by moving so fast, but what am I losing by not getting to pause and really build with this person or build with myself?
True that. You're making me think about siestas. You know, there are cultures where America, let's siesta again. Okay, we want to do something. Let's siesta at all before we can do it again.
Right.
But I'm all for a good siesta. Hey, that's real. You gotta take a pause. I love that, Bria, what you're saying about that and how we assume that just because it's the way we do it in the United States of America, because of our hegemonic nature of this country, almost everything in the world is based on what the United States does, and that's a power. So it's not just our economic power and our military power. It is also the power that we have to shape realities. Like we shape realities in this country. We shape the macro realities and the micro realities. And right now we're talking about more of the micro realities, but the notion that, as you just said, we got to rush everywhere. Or I can only have 15 minutes for a lunch because I got to get back to work. And if you're lucky enough, maybe you can get 45 minutes to an hour, but there are lots of people who work on jobs where they get maybe 2 15-minute breaks and a 30-minute lunch.
Right. And you eat lunch at your desk.
Yeah, and you eat lunch at your desk and you are always feeling rushed because that is the indoctrination. That's the DNA of our culture. That's how we roll in the United States of America, find that the science is saying it. And then your experience abroad and so many other people that I've talked to who've gone abroad for a long time, not just a vacation, but they've really settled abroad for a little while. Bria, they share the same stories that you're sharing with us today, that life is different. And when you talked about, you know, it being normal in Singapore for someone to still be living at home with their family or with their parents, even well into their 30s, that is frowned upon here as we were laying out. And don't let you be a man child and still in the house with your parents. Oh, Lord, you know, that's the worst thing in the world. But the flip side of that is no, it really is not, especially if you have the opportunity, as you said, to be in community with your family in a deeper way. And two, economically, it's a tremendous help to not have to jump out there. You know, who said that you're grown at 18? That is just such a arbitrary number that somebody picked. It certainly wasn't the mama who said that, because for mamas, like I tell my son, you will never be growner than me. And that's what my mama told me, right? And that's true.
Right.
I'm the mama forever. Yes, I'm the mama. So, so you know, just that part of at least some of the African holdovers to our culture of being Black Americans is a beautiful thing. And I think that memory, that muscle memory, although it was disrupted and corrupted, we can have a whole nother show about that, how it was disrupted and corrupted. there are flashes of that Afrocentric worldview that is a part of who we are, and the passing down from Big Mama to Big Mama to Big Mama and Big Daddy to Big Daddy helps us keep a little bit of that imprint. Not enough, but we got a little bit of that imprint.
And I mean, we can feel that in ourselves, the like the war internally that's saying like, no, rest is okay. And it doesn't mean anything negative. And then the, well, I got to be doing something. And that's why I love to follow Trisha of the Nap Ministry, because she talks about that. She feels like she was put on this earth to encourage Black people to rest, to sit down somewhere and lay down and to really reconnect with who we were before colonization told us anything about ourselves and our productivity.
Yes.
And that's why I also say, like, I got to a place where I realized my ancestors' wildest dream was not for me to work myself into a grave. It was for me to rest in a very real way. Like, I think of that, like, my ancestors were enslaved in North Carolina and they were likely picking cotton and tobacco and other things of that nature, working 6 days a week and sun up to sundown. And they didn't dream of being on a Forbes list or of publishing X amount of books. They dreamt of rest. Literally, like, I want to wake up and be able to choose what I do with my day.
Yes.
To have control over what my children get to do with their day, and to be able to have joy and have moments of just like reprieve. And so if we can tap into that, then we can reset what we see as success and say, look, it doesn't mean that I don't want to accomplish certain things in my career or for my community, but that's not going to come at the expense of my wellness, because there is nothing more important than me being able to live this life the way that I want to live this life. And that autonomy is a big thing. So rest and autonomy go so hand in hand.
They do. Autonomy, agency. As you were talking, the word agency was coming to mind. Mm-hmm.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, going back to the notion of what it means to be still, I remember my grandmother, and hopefully others who are joining us on this journey today on Hello Somebody can relate to this. So my grandmother, you know, most Black grandmothers hail from the South because that is where the overwhelming majority of Black Americans were because of enslavement. We know this. When I was growing up, my grandmother would force my siblings and I to sit down and be still. Mm-hmm. And if it was thundering mm-hmm. and lightning, she would say, don't move. God is doing his business. Turn off mm-hmm. the TV. Turn off the radio. Don't mm-hmm. move. God is doing his business. Bria, I'm really feeling this right now. I think in the spirit of this conversation, we should mm-hmm. take a moment just to be still.
Yes. Yeah, this country needs to be sat down. We need a grandmother to tell this whole country it's quiet time. Let's play the silent game. Everybody sit down somewhere. Don't touch nothing.
Don't touch nothing. Don't move.
But it's
COVID was something like that, Bria. I mean, I've heard people talk about COVID in that way that it required us to slow down.
Yes. I mean, and so I think that's a perfect example too of though what is so wrong about this country is like it was a slowdown. We were seeing so many people around us get sick, dealing with long COVID or dying.
Yes.
And then this country is turning around now and being like, y'all better get back to work immediately. Why y'all wanted to stay remote? We need y'all back in these offices. And people are really pushing back and saying like, have we not learned anything? We kept talking about this new normal that we wanted. And that was at the beginning of the pandemic. And I think people just got tired because they thought it was going to be, you know, and we're all exhausted from COVID, but it doesn't change the fact that like we need the stillness. And even, you know, one thing that I saw was like some of the only positives come of COVID was like with humans being still, nature was able to thrive.
That's right.
Like dolphins were coming back to seas and parts of oceans that they hadn't been seen in years, and air was cleaning up and all of these things were happening because we had sat down for a second. And I also think of that as like, what would our relationship with this planet look like if humans were not so focused on being productive all the time that we are literally polluting and poisoning everything around us to do what we do? So again, that could be its own conversation, but I really do think the stillness showed us what is possible when we do it. But some people have just proven that their ability to profit off of productivity comes before our stillness. And they are willing to force us back into offices, force people back to unsustainable levels of work output. And people are pushing back. You know, people are unionizing in ways that like we have never seen before. The Great Resignation has been called. People are saying, I would rather quit and figure something out than to work a job that's going to send me into this early grave. Like, I think people are really putting their feet down as far as what they're not willing to deal with anymore.
That is a beautiful thing in my mind. There's a spiritualist. One of my dear friends is a spiritualist, and she has a saying, and it goes something like, chaos is the reordering of things. And so COVID was and still is very chaotic. Is very painful, but things are being reordered, and you were just laying it down. They're being reordered. And as much as the old order wants us to go back to normal, air quote, normal was never good. People are pushing back because things are being reordered. So it will never be like quite like it was before COVID ever in anything that we do. I mean, COVID is going to be with us like the flu forever. As you laid out, people are saying, oh, no, I'm not going back to work in this way. So you do see more hybrid models now within companies because people are pushing back and seeing I could be more productive if I don't have to literally get into a vehicle or go and walk to the bus stop or the rapid or the train station to go God knows how many minutes or hours away, depending on where you live. If you live in the heart of New York, you know, Manhattan, or you live in a Chicago or a ATL where traffic is very heavy to the extension of taking years off your life, too. I mean, there are studies out there about all the time that people spend in traffic and how it is bad for their health. So if we look at COVID the reorder, chaos. That touches my soul. Chaos is the reordering of things.
I love that quote so much.
Oof. Yeah, and it's right deep. There. It's deep. Chaos is the reordering of things. And so we need to reorder. So Bria, as we help people reorder in things that look very chaotic, and not just look, they may, things may be chaotic. Can we give people a few things that they can do to find some positive reordering in moments they may find themselves in throughout their lives?
Yes. I mean, one of the biggest things is the idea that we don't all work the same. Our brains don't operate the same. We're not all productive at the same times. And I think we're so stuck on this Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 model that just doesn't work. Some people have their best thinking early in the morning, but you get into the evening and they're just like, okay, my brain is like done. It's overloaded. And some people work well in the evenings. And it's like, I'm not a morning person. I think that level of flexibility is so important to try and carve out for yourself. And I know that not everyone works a job where that is possible. But for those who are in conversations with their employers and are considering what their new normal will look like, and to what you said, the hybrid models, I think really, again, getting some still moments with yourself and saying, when do I do my best work? How do I do my best work? What conditions do I need to be successful, and really positioning it to your teams in that way. And for those who are listening, who are the employers who are in the positions of power, really being open to those conversations too, and not feeling like everybody has to be online at the same exact time, doing work at the same exact time, but recognizing that there shouldn't be any idea of normal because no two people are the same. We don't operate the same way.
That's right.
And to expect everyone to move that way is to treat humans like machines. And that's just not what we are. I really think that we just need to be having collective conversations about, does it actually hurt me if we did a 4-day work week? You know, I think people are considering that.
They are.
I think people are considering like non-financial forms of benefits of more PTO and more a parental leave. And all of those conversations I think are really important to have. And I think a lot of employees have previously felt like if they were going to bring it up, it was like, am I risking my job? But there is such a strength in numbers and being able to point towards the data and the research. And I'm even going to look up this study that you're mentioning, but there are so many studies about the effect of stress or certain work structures on us, both our wellness, but also on our productivity. And people have said, you know, countries that switch to a 4-day work week are not any less productive than countries have a 5-day work week.
Yes.
And when you present that data and you can say the numbers are not lying and they are going against everything that you believe is true here, I think we can really get to something else. So that's one that's a more macro thing. I think I'd be remiss to not say unionize. For those who are at jobs where you have multiple coworkers, unionize, because it is a lot easier to have these conversations when you're not going into the room by yourself and you have backups. Say, we actually all have talked and said that we all want something different. And I think that everyone should be considering that, especially if you have a team of a significant size where you really do have the numbers. And so we're seeing journalists and political campaigns and all sorts of spaces who are unionizing and really able to get, at the very least, the compensation for all the hours they're putting in right now. But then, you know, really deciding, like, sometimes it's like, I don't really want to be compensated for the work I'm doing now, because I don't want to be doing the work I'm doing now. I really need a better work-life balance. And that is a lot easier to do if you've got backups. So I definitely recommend people considering unionizing and just building community with other people who are having these conversations.
That's right. And let us shout out in this moment, since you brought up unionizing, shout out to the Starbucks workers from Cleveland to Buffalo to New York to all over, wherever y'all at. Shout out to you for standing up and bringing folks in the room with you and saying that you want to unionize. And absolutely shout out and shout up to our Amazon sisters and brothers and family and friends. Bessemer, Alabama, baby, we see you. We see you, because they started it. Bessemer really started this flow for workers at Amazon. And just know that there's so many people with you. The fact that you mentioned that as a part of ultimate self-care, unionizing, people might not have necessarily seen it that way. So I'm so glad you brought unionizing into this space.
What else? Any other recommendations for people? I'm thinking about, you talked about therapy. Sometimes therapy is frowned upon depending on what culture you come from. And especially if you are a man, I think for most cultures, because again, the Eurocentric worldview has poisoned far too many cultures and movements. But therapy, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it.
Right. Nothing wrong with it. I think it's so important. And even before therapy, maybe another recommendation is, you know, there's the memes that go around that's always check on your strong friend. Everybody is the strong friend that needs to be checked on.
Come on.
I think that is a big, big thing. It's like, I think we all believe that we are the only ones going through what we're going through. Yeah. And we don't take the time to really check in with our people about the layers of stress that they're dealing with. And so I believe that everyone should be doing their own individual work. But we also should be taking care of one another. And that goes back to the communal mindset of, yes, I'm going to be a little selfish and take care of myself, but I'm also going to look to the left and right of me and make sure that the people that I love, the people that I work with, the people I go to church with, are also taking care of themselves and bring those conversations into there. Like, what does it mean for clergy from their pulpits to really be talking about self-care in these moments? What does it mean for educators to be taking time with their students? You know, and I think that's, everybody's under so much pressure right now.
Yes.
And the second to ask, how are you? And really care about the answer and express the care about the answer. Like, no, really, how are you?
Right.
I think it's so big, and it doesn't need to be that I'm texting you every single day or every single week, but that check-in periodically could mean so much for people. And I'm to get to a really sad point, we've seen people who we would never have expected who are dying by suicide, and yes. Miss Chesley Christ, and, you know, so many visible people, and all of, you know, people who are just saying, oh my gosh, but I just worked with that person, and I just collaborated with that person and never saw it coming. Mm-hmm. And there's no blame, obviously, you know, people are going through what they're going through. But I also think of how we can learn from those moments and just check in with one another more and just make sure people don't feel alone in what they're navigating.
So true. And other things that people can do, the mani-pedi is real, you know, that's therapy. The masseuse is real. So these are non-medical, but like spiritual kind of things that people can do to help them center themselves, because it is the time you should be in your mind focusing mainly on you and those things, and taking vacations. And that's why I'm such a big proponent of people having a living wage and living a good life, because some of the remedies that we are discussing that cost money, people have to have disposable income to be able to partake in these things. And so there's value, intrinsic value in every life. And I just don't believe that poor people should have to work their fingers to the bone every single flipping day of the week and have 2 and 3 jobs and never be able to enjoy the fruits of their labor because they're working so hard just to survive. There is something wrong with that. The whole notion of the working poor, those two words should not go together. Right. That in and of itself is wrong. Exactly. So advocacy for people to live a good life. And that is a multifaceted, multi-layer thing. It's a multi-layered reality. Living a good life doesn't mean just bringing in all the money. It means, part of it means your spiritual well-being, your physical well-being, your mental well-being, your communal well-being, your relationship well-being all the way around. And my God, being able to afford to take a vacation every now and then, even if you can't go to the most exotic place, but some people can't afford to go the next state over.
Right, right. And that's why we say bread and roses. You know, that's like where that comes from. Is, yes, we want to meet people's needs. People need to have housing. People need to have food on their table. People need to have clothes on their backs. But do we not deserve to, like, what are we doing it for if I can't smell the roses and enjoy this life too? And I just think of how many people literally are working 40 plus, 60 plus hours a week and never get something, or get criticized the moment they do something for themselves.
Come on.
Oh, well, if you really broke, why you got a Michael Kors bag? I can't have a purse. I haven't worked hard enough to have a purse. Really? That's what you're telling me? I haven't worked hard enough to go to Atlantic City. Like, come on. Like, what are we doing it for if not to be able to see all of these beautiful things? And I just think that we have normalized, you know, get back to normalized. We have normalized the idea that you have to be a certain wealth bracket to enjoy beaches
and
beautiful sights and a matinee movie and going to see a Broadway show. And I just love all of the initiatives where people are saying like, no, you should be able to do that. It's something I love about my own parents too, because we grew up working class. And my mom, one thing about her, we going on a cruise. And looking back, there were moments when I would ask, like, you know, we could have done some other things with that money. But in a serious note, she wanted us to know that we deserved that. Like, you deserve to be able to see these sites just as much as anybody else does.
Yeah.
And us being a little tight this month does not mean that you don't deserve to see beautiful things, to eat beautiful things, to enjoy things that make you happy. And for some of us, that's travel. For you, that might be, again, having a monthly massage or going to the movies every week. It doesn't have to be too crazy, but yeah, it does require that disposable income. And so often people are spending all of their money on rent.
That's right.
And childcare, that when it's time for them to do something for themselves, they've got cents, coins, spare change to do that. And it's not right. You know, we deserve to have the luxuries, you know.
You deserve nice things. And all of that feeds into your ability to be a good mom, if you're a mom, to be a good human being. If you know, you don't have to have children, to be a good dad, if you're a dad, to be a good man or woman, to be a good family member. All of those things are interconnected. We always talk about intersectionality, but when it comes to self-care, it's not just about racial or gender or sexual orientation or religion intersectionality in the way that we think about it in a social construct. It is also the intersectionality of yourself with yourself in relation to all of those titles and all of the things that you have to do. And men, we're talking to you too. Now, sisters, we lifting you up, but we talking about the brothers too. Because if people are good with themselves, baby, they will be better with the world. It reminds me of a scripture in the Christian Bible where Jesus, you know, the question was, what is the greatest commandment? You know, they were trying to trip him up. Them fancy titled folks was trying to trip Jesus up. And he said to love the Lord thy God with all their heart, mind, soul, and spirit. And I might be adding a little on to that, so forgive the Turnerism in there. But to love thy neighbor as thyself. Now, the key word is you can't love your neighbor if you don't love yourself. You see how Jesus flipped that thing?
I think they need to hear that one again. Wait a second. Ooh.
Come on. You can't love your neighbor if you don't love yourself. You see how Jesus flipped that thing on them? It's like, y'all got to wake up real early to get it off on Jesus. He let them know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. To love the Lord thy God. Because he was talking to them hoity-toity religious folks, some Pharisees and Sadducees. Mm-hmm. They thought they had them. They thought they had them cornered. He said, oh, no, baby. To love the Lord thy God with all their heart, mind, soul, and spirit. And to love thy neighbor as thyself. That's it.
And to even deepen that, if we loved our neighbor as much as we loved ourselves, how much of our social ills would go away? Like, how much of, you know, we have mothers who are dealing with postpartum stress, and if they were being cared for, would their children be better cared for? We have domestic violence victims who are empathizing with their abusers because they're like, well, I know that this person is economically strapped right now. And so they're just stressed and they're taking it out on me. But like, what if we cared for one another and loved ourselves and loved our neighbors in a real way? And then that addressed homelessness, and that addressed theft, and that addressed gun violence.
That's it.
But we don't want to think of it like that. We just want to outsource it to police and tell them to deal with it after it's already happened. But I really think of, like, if we really loved our neighbor and really loved ourselves, like, there are just so many things that would become non-factors in our society. And we've seen that in other societies. We've seen that in lots of European societies where the taxes are high, but the quality of life is also high.
That's it.
And so there are just certain things that are just like mind-blowing to them. Mass shootings. Why would someone do that? I can't even fathom why someone is that angry at the world and at their community. And there's just such a lack of love in our politics. There's a lack of love in how we treat one another.
It is.
And it really shows in everything. So, I mean, I think for some people that feels like, oh, you know, she's dragging it. But I really, like, if we really loved one another for real,
for real,
we would live in such a safer community. We would be happier. Again, we'd work better with one another. We'd enjoy what we do. Like, everything would be different.
Harmony.
And maybe some people, you know, maybe Jeff Bezos would be a little less rich.
Hello.
But, like, I'm willing to do that.
Hello. Harmonious. Now you're hitting on another thing, Bria, so we got to have you back. You can't have harmony and justice in a world where you got so few people who have so much, right? So few who have so much and so many who have too little. That is out of harmony. That's not how it's supposed to go.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
She's breathing right now? Yes, she's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Some of the things that we named, they cost money. Can we talk a little bit about self-care ideas for people who can't afford to spend any money at this particular stage in their lives? We want them, right. We want them to get there where they can spend a whole lot. But for now, if they're really tight on money, what are some of the things that they could do for some me time?
My favorite is getting out in nature. I think being surrounded by nature is so grounding, especially if you are willing, like, take the shoes off, put your feet on some grass, like for real. Like, it is so grounding to be surrounded by the fresh air, by real greenery, not some plastic shrubs in a corner, like real greenery. I think that's a big one. It's like, find your nearest park, your nearest hiking trail, and like getting to that space and going on, even if it's like a 15 minute walk or something. It is so grounding and calming to be surrounded. And I think being surrounded by, again, to go into spirituality, being surrounded by something that feels bigger than me, something that feels like awe-inspiring. And it's just like, my God created this and also created me, and I deserve to exist in peace and in harmony and in joy and in love. I think it can really bring up all of those feelings for people. So that is like my biggest one. But also, I think everybody has different things. Some people are like, oh, I'm in nature and I'm sneezing a lot and there's bugs. That's not really my thing. But like finding, again, the stillness is like finding that moment. And meditation can be a beautiful way to tap into stillness, of just like closing your eyes. And I think sometimes we make it more difficult than it is. Just closing your eyes and just letting thoughts come and leave and just seeing what sticks. And that will also open up what you enjoy. If what you enjoy is asking the nearest family member or friend to you to give you a little shoulder rub because you carry your stress in your shoulders, if that is hugs, you know, I think that's the biggest thing that I noticed during COVID. It's like, I miss hugging people.
I did
people.
Too.
And like real hugs, like yeah, when you hold
deep,
it for 5 to 10 seconds. Like whatever that is, sometimes your self-care will require other people. And that's why we get into the communal.
That is so
true. And being willing to ask people for what you need. So those are two for me. I'm curious, what's yours though?
That doesn't cost money. So, because I love myself a good massage. I'm going to put it out there. Meditation, definitely. Certainly because of COVID, got deeper into that, reading a scripture, you know, so whatever spiritual tradition you follow, if you follow one, for me, reading a scripture or listening to a good song. Oh my God, your playlist, you know, and just get in the living room or wherever, whatever space you have, and just go to town listening to your favorite tunes and just, yeah, get into it that way. I love good music, getting lost. Poetry. Yes. You know, if you got a good poet, a good read, you were talking about that when you go to eat a meal. If you're by yourself, you bring a good book, and people can be at home and make themselves a nice meal. It could be simple and just cuddle up with a good book.
Yes. Oh my God.
Those things. I know our producer, she loves to lather the lotion on her feet.
Yes.
That's what she said. And oil in her scalp. Before bed, she's like,
"Oh yes, a nice oil scalp massage. That'll put me to sleep too."
So. I miss my mother. You know, when Sim mentioned that, I was thinking about my mom. You know, when she used to plait that hair growing up and putting that oil, that oil in between the parts. I was like, "Oh, that felt so good." It's like you don't want them to stop. Don't stop.
Right. Just
do it again. Do it again, Mama. Do it again.
In a nap. Naps are free.
Yes, naps are free.
When you get a free moment, I mean, for the parents, that might be a little bit more difficult. Yeah. But like when you get that random 30-minute nap or hour nap when you weren't planning on it, you wake up feeling like a
it's new the best.
Person. I love it's the best that. Day. Also, I had a friend who her thing was if she had a bunch of calls back to back to back for work, she'd schedule in like a 5-minute dance break and literally like play her jam, like her song, whatever that song is, and just like dance like nobody's watching in the comfort of your home. And even that can just be like getting your heartbeat going and you're listening to your song and you're being silly, you're laughing, a good laugh.
Yes.
When I laugh and my belly hurts, I'm like, oh yeah,
it's the
I needed that so bad.
Or laugh until you cry, because that's a good laugh right there, baby.
Laughing the person next to
you. Can't stop. You just can't stop. You rolling. So yeah, watching comedy, we didn't think about that. But yeah, if there's a favorite show you have, even if it's not comedy, but whatever takes you to a happy place that lifts you, that is edifying, you should do that. But part of being able to do that, Bria, we got to go back to how we started, is you got to know your why. You got to get with yourself. You got to know what brings you joy. And if that which brings you joy doesn't impede on anybody else, I'm sorry, we got to put that out there, Bria, because some folks, like, what brings you joy shouldn't bring anybody else pain. But if brings you joy doesn't harm anybody else, but it only edifies you, baby, you need to do that thing. This was absolutely fantastic. I want to go back how we started with the one and only Audre Lorde, a feminist and a civil rights leader. She said self-care is not self-indulgence. It is self-preservation. Come on, let's self-preserve, baby. Let's do that. Yes. Bria, where can people find you, darling? If they're looking for you, where can they find you?
Yes. Well, if you're looking, you can find me for sure on Instagram. I'm at Freckled While Black. Freckled While Black. Okay. Remind people, Black people got freckles.
Black folks got freckles. Yes, they do.
I'm on Twitter, but I'm private there, you know, at @Bria_Baker. I like to give my real hot takes there, but you know, you can find me, And then my website, briabaker.com. But I'm looking forward to connecting to people. And one of the conversations I would point people to is if you're coming into this one and you didn't hear the first one, you can really find me in our first conversation on Hello Somebody.
You better say that. Hello Somebody, because everybody is somebody. Bria Baker, nothing but love for you, baby. Nothing but love for you.
Somebody. Yeah, change is coming, the pain is numbing. Try to shoot for the stars if you gon' aim for something. Embrace the love for your brother and sister. Unity's the missing brush, we need to puzzle this picture. Let's paint it up, frame it up for the world to see. Hang the hatred up. Enough is enough, is enough. Making changes on us, interna. Her voice is the truth, her wise words inspire the youth to keep their eyes on the roof. It's the end, never give up, keep conquering goals. To the eye, intelligence, silver, wisdom is gold. Back to the end, now is your time, stay firm, don't fold. To the A, all you need is the three bones, that's what Granny said. Now I'ma make sure these words from Granny spread. For all of here, just give her your ear. She can take you to the promised land, I swear. World peace is what they fear. From Queens to Cleveland, Ohio, we here. Famous.
Hello Somebody is a production of iHeartRadio and the Black Effect Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.